Welcome to another broadcast of Philosophic Perspectives on the Artist First Radio Network. All past shows are archived. You can pick them up at artistfirst.com. And now your host, Arthur D. Schwartz.
Why, hello, everybody, once again. Thanks for stopping by, as they say. Well, tonight is the discussion is of one of the great discussions of all time in philosophy. It has to do with freedom. I'm going to be doing a group discussion on the topic, the same topic that is the show. It's called Forms of Freedom. This is going to be on March 18th. So this is sort of a warm-up for that. And, you know, freedom is such an incredibly interesting subject, and at the same time, it's unreal because there are so many different forms of freedom, and they're not all the same. So the question becomes, are we arguing just about a word, or is it more than just a word? And it's a subject that has such strong opinions about. And, you know, we see this in the in our ridiculous political season this year, and the wide diversity of the candidates' ideas of freedom. And I do think that freedom is something, but I'm not sure that it, in my own mind, I'm not sure if it's what we normally think of it as. And I think that might be the problem. So what I'm going to start off is I'm just going to read the introduction to the group discussion coming up, just to get things lined up, and then we'll go from there. The stress between ethical reality, or as I would like to say, actuality, and the concepts that attempt to explain it is something that has fascinated me for most of my life. This discussion will be about A, the concept of freedom, and B, the things that in actuality constitute freedom. It is fair to say that there are many differing perspectives on freedom, both as abstract and concrete. The realm of freedom is very broad, as it can encompass personal freedom, free will, political freedom, creative freedom, intellectual freedom, existential freedom, and much more. The issue of the technological singularity, which was a topic taken up on this show back on June 17th, did take up or broach the subject of existential freedom. And it was actually the Radio Roundtable discussion that we had. So for those interested, you can look at that. But that did entertain the notion of existential freedom and how freedom is being impacted or can be impacted by technology and, of course, what's called the technological singularity that many believe is approaching. The overriding idea of this event or this discussion is to pursue the various meanings of freedom. Self-realization is a form of freedom because unfreedom can block or hinder an individual's self-realization. NRA advocates think that ownership of firearms is an intrinsic element of freedom. However, advocates of gun control laws have precisely an opposite view. Pro-choice advocates in favor of favor legalized abortion, value the right of a woman's right to choose, freedom to choose. But pro-life proponents believe that the freedom of a fetus to be born overrides that right. Libertarian and laissez-faire economists believe that there should be little, if any, restriction on economic activity in a free marketplace. But socialists believe that a marketplace that fails to provide basic needs is a corruption of the idea of freedom that denies the rights of many to freely pursue life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Freedom and human flourishing are, I believe, very interrelated. They are interrelated because unless we form an understanding of freedom that is both concrete and abstract, it is unlikely that we can ever know or understand, from both individual and collective perspectives, the meaning of human flourishing. The varieties of human freedom and the astonishing permutations create a groundwork for great discussion. Okay, so just let's start off with just looking at the points that I brought up. I mean, you know, a lot of these are hot button political issues, and we're going to look at that from the perspective of abstraction of freedom, and what freedom actually means in the concrete, or what I would call actual freedom. So, let's see here. So the first one I mention is the gun issue. So, the right to have a gun. Well, one can say, well, I have a right to have a gun, according to the Second Amendment of the Constitution. Well, okay, let's say I have a right, but does that constitute freedom? I am disallowed from doing a lot of things. The laws prevent me from doing a lot of things. But is having the right to bear arms the most important, or one of the most important types of freedom? I mean, if the thing is, it's what is freedom? And so in a political context, it doesn't really mean your ability to do what you do, what you want to do or don't want to do. It has something to do with a perceived right. So if you're an NRA or an advocate of the ability to own firearms, that right, if I don't have that right, I don't have that freedom. But the gun control advocate, which I am, I'll come out right and say that, would feel that, no, I'm not free if people have guns because it jeopardizes my well-being and that of my family and so forth and so on. Well, the NRA advocate would say, no, you're safer if you have a gun. So is the freedom about the ability to buy a gun or being safe? Is the debate really about freedom to be safe? Isn't really that. I mean, I think that's what it is. But if you do that, then the whole idea of the whole debate changes, doesn't it? It changes perspective, because if it's really about we need to be safe. If I can be safe, I can be free. Free from fear. Free to do what I want to do without feeling like that my life might be endangered. So that changes the whole complex of freedom. Because I think it really is about that. It's about safety. Whether you're a gun, whether you believe in owning firearms as a right, or whether you believe in strict gun control laws, in both cases, it's about wanting to be safe. And so if freedom has to do with wanting to be safe in this particular context, maybe it's possible that that explains a lot of things. To make this point, let's move along to the libertarian socialist, kind of dichotomy, where a libertarian believes in very little minimal interference. But it's important to note, not completely government interference, but it's important to note that they are for some government, very limited government. But I think once you say you're for some government, then it kind of opens the door. Where do you want to stop it? But the idea of laissez-faire or libertarian-oriented, free market philosophies, it's cast in terms of, I have a right to make as much money as I possibly can, to have my business, uninterfered with the government, and so forth and so on. I have a right to be free of onerous pressures from government. tax collection, IRS tax collectors, heavy-handed tactics by government agencies, social agencies, and all kinds of requirements of many kinds in the modern world. And so they want to be free from that. But is it about freedom, or is it about freedom from something that they find onerous in society? Or is it much like the gun control laws, that they think that laws or less laws are best, that which governs least governs best, as has been said long ago? So then is freedom in this case about tearing down government interference? So now it's not so much freedom about, as I was just talking before, about, a freedom from just fear. Freedom from the fear of injury because I don't have a gun to protect myself. And so now the libertarian wants to be free from government interference. And so the NRA advocate wants to be free to own the gun, and he doesn't want the government to tell him what he can do or not do. But then again, most individuals understand that there are limitations of what kinds of guns. I mean, we're not allowed to have howitzers in the backyard or have our own little ballistic missiles launched from our backyard. So they're drawing a line somewhere. So this is the thing. What is freedom? Freedom is this notion of, you have it based on free will. And so, I can do whatever I want to do and unimpeded by anything, and that makes me free. But I think most reasonable people would understand that that's actually not true at all under any circumstances, because freedom is, if you look at it, it's the familiar concept of freedom and responsibility. Freedom is very much a part of doing something that you believe is the right thing to do. It's very controlled. Somebody who has an obsession or is a drug addict and is being controlled by the addiction or by the obsession, is he or she free? I don't think so. I think freedom has to do with following your own wisdom. What you believe is the right thing for you to do is that, for whatever reasons, then if you can do it, you're free. But if you have, if you say, well, I want to do A, and then a few minutes later you're doing B, then you could say perhaps that you're not free. So I think the practical definition of freedom, the pragmatic definition of freedom, is your ability, or in terms of an individual, the ability to do what you believe you should do. That's my definition of a pragmatic freedom, that freedom is about doing what you believe you should do. But in a society, it's a little bit different, because doesn't freedom once again kind of mesh, line up with rational thinking? In other words, you want to do A, and then 5 minutes later, because of some impulse, you don't do A, you do B, or you do C. And so you're not free because you're being controlled by impulses out of things that you can't control, your appetite or your addiction or your craving for this or your craving for that or your temper. Most people wouldn't call that person free. Why? Because he or she is not being controlled by her rational mind. In the same way with a society, isn't freedom about a rational society? Okay, so now I'm gonna I'm going to kind of, there's other arguments here. I don't know if we'll get to the abortion issue. That's a very interesting one when it comes to the subject of freedom. But I'm going to say something very controversial. I am a small D Democrat, meaning, you know, I believe in democracy very, very much. I strongly believe in democracy. Yet, is it possible that an undemocratic country run by an autocrat could be freer than a very, very democratic country? By the way, before I answer my own question, folks, you can contact me at arthur@arthurdschwartz.com. Well, what's the answer? Can an authoritarian country be more free than a very, very, almost a purely democratic country? It's oxymoronic because you say authoritarian. Doesn't authoritarian mean the opposite of freedom? Doesn't authoritarian mean that the people are being controlled by a controlling leader? Well, I said authoritarian does not necessarily mean despot. You know, there are enlightened despots. I mean, you can have a very good leader, but it's not a democracy. Well, on the subject of freedom, is it possible to be more free in an autocracy than in a democratic country? I think under certain circumstances, the answer is absolutely yes. Because a democracy can be very, very unfree. A democracy doesn't prevent the people, doesn't prevent the democratically elected country from repressing people, repressing minorities, taking away personal freedoms, or taking away freedoms from one group or the other. So democracy, there's nothing really intrinsically free about democracy, as often people mention when these subjects come up. I mean, Adolf Hitler was freely elected, amazingly, and then, of course, he only was elected once because he became der Führer after that. No more elections. But there's nothing intrinsically free about a democracy. So then what does it say about freedom? Okay, so then it has nothing to do with democracy. If there was an enlightened despot and it was run by a family and this country is 400 years old and it's always been the greatest country in the world, the most peace loving, the most tranquil, the richest, and the most affluent, and the laws were, let people, you know, be very free and to do what they wanted to do. Yet still, they were over, you know, being ruled by an autocrat who could take away freedom at whim, at will. See, it's not about democracy. It's about your ability to enjoy life as you see fit, and as you, in combination with respecting the rights of other individuals in that community, because when you talk about a free society, you're talking about a society that's free for not just some, but for all. So if an enlightened despot, you know, took care of that business and he or she watched over everyone in terms of guaranteeing their rights to conduct their activities without interference, would also the economic system was strong so that there was no poverty and so that what's flourishing is what's called a socialized society. Couldn't that be the freer society? Now, that doesn't mean I would endorse it. That doesn't mean I'm against democracy. I certainly am not. The great thing about a democracy is because it does allow you to fail. It does allow the society to fail and to make bad mistakes because that's the way it should be, because people want to feel, you know, grown up. You know, a mature country, you know, doesn't want to be, you know, having all their decisions made for them and so that we have certainly the right to make bad decisions, and democracies can certainly do that, sometimes better than non-democracies. Of course, there's lots of examples of non-democracy that are just complete, not only autocratic, but very unfree. So anyway, the point I'm making is, what is freedom? Okay, so let's back up a little bit. I'm talking about the freedom of society, the freedoms that are of a society, and the freedoms it gives its people. But then let's go back to the notion of free will, which is really how the whole thing starts. So the free will is a notion that what you do is not controlled by any other antecedent, by any other cause, that you're not a part of a causal chain. If A, then B, then C, then D, then E, and so forth and so on, one thing causes the other ad infinitum. And so the argument is that free will means that you're not so controlled, that whatever the causation is that's influencing your behavior, you always have the ability to do what you believe, to break that chain and do what, your actions come from your free will. Well, taken to its extreme, like most things taken to the extreme, that's a silly argument, because clearly, things do determine who we are and what our interests are. I mean, growing up in a particular society, having a particular disposition when you're born, and lots of other things have an awful lot to do with who you are and how you think and what you do. There's no question about that. But the question is there anything at all that's free? So I'm in the camp that there is. There's a, I love this quote, and I'm going to get it for you right now. It's, here it is. I just was looking at it a second ago. Okay. Hegel, the philosopher Hegel, never cares to point out how the man's hairbreadth of choice gives all its significance to human art and human conduct. I just want to provide the name of that author. It goes back about 100 years, I think. One second here. Here we go. His name is Robert McIntosh. It's in the book Hegel and Hegelianism, 1903. That actually is comes from part 1.9, or section 1.9 in my book, Relative Freedom. The chapter is called Relative Freedom. It's from Ethical Empowerment. And I love that. It's the hair breadth of freedom. And that's the thing that I think is pivotal, that we can have a free will, whether we are living in a society that has an autocratic administration or a pure democracy. We have a hair breadth of freedom that can make all the difference in the world. So the idea of free will is basically central to the idea of freedom. And if we come to accept the fact that there's no absolute freedom, where I really don't think you can really argue for absolute freedom, but I don't think you can argue for absolute relativism, absolute determinism. I don't think either are absolute, but they both have a role to play. But this, this is the abstract, the debate about personal freedom. Is there such a thing as a free will? And I'm old-fashioned. I do believe there is. There is that hair breadth of freedom, as Robert McIntosh said. And somehow that relates to the discussion that I started, that I had started when the show began. There's something. What makes something free? Is it because you want to buy a gun, or and you should be able to buy a gun, or that the laws prevent you from buying a gun? Well, it does. I think there's something that there underpins the notion of the concept of freedom. Something underpins it. They're all, you know, there's different kinds of freedom, different forms of freedom. Yet there is something about it that goes right back to the idea of free will or not. And that's what I want to pinpoint tonight. Because if we do that, if we can pinpoint what really constitutes freedom, real freedom, not faux freedom, not freedom that's all totally mixed up in ideological politics. I mean, it's a kind of a, it's a little ironic and kind of amazing if you think about it. All these people spouting freedom to get a gun and blah, 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 and they're doing it in the most knee-jerk, unfree way you can possibly can. You know what these individuals are going to say before they say it because you know what their position is, and they're just mouthing the habitual speech patterns. They know nothing about freedom. And yet, they're pointing out all these things. If I don't own a gun, I'm not free. Or if I can't run my business and if I create a monopoly and I run every other company out of business, it's okay because it's my freedom. And if you try to take that away from me, you're a communist. I mean, this is the moronic level of the debate. Freedom is something much more delicate than that. No, I'll quote something too that I think I did in the other a recent show, but I know he said it. It's Rush Limbaugh, and he was talking, I believe, about Joe Biden, the vice president. And I'm just paraphrasing because I tried at one point to dig it up and I couldn't find it. But I remember that Limbaugh was running off and saying, "How dare he, Joe Biden, say?" That I think he was talking about the space industry. I'm not sure what the industry was, but Biden made the argument that the Chinese political system made it a little bit easier to do these certain things because they don't have to deal with, in a democracy, you know, all kinds of interference with getting through elections and having the debate that you have to deal with. They don't have to deal with that raising tax money to do something. You don't have to do that in a communist country, an autocratic country, because they just do whatever they want to do. They don't have to worry about what the voters want because there really aren't any voters. But anyway, Limbaugh was going, "Oh my, how can Joe Biden say such a horrible thing that the Chinese government are better than we are in this particular thing?" And I think it was space, but I'm not really sure. It doesn't really matter. Well, that's exactly what I'm talking about. How moronic. I'm sure there's lots of things the Chinese can do that better than we can because of the system of government. That doesn't mean I'm defending the Chinese government at all. I'm just pointing out that element in certain cases, make it easier for them to provide better services or to accomplish more progress if it's in space. Space is an issue. I mean, I know the most experts I think believe that China could pull ahead, way ahead of us, because our space program is not having nearly the money being put into it as it had been in the past. And of course, with the communist country, they could just keep pouring money into it, in addition to stealing all our technology. And so they, they're putting themselves in a pretty good position. The point is, isn't the subject of freedom connected, as I mentioned in my opening talk, or opening essay, you might say, about flourishing? What does it take for a human being, for society, for civilization, for the human race to succeed on every level, economic, spiritual, ethical, every which way, politically, harmonically. That isn't that what freedom is? Self-realization, what it takes to thrive, to flourish. When we see what it will take to flourish, I think we will understand freedom. Because freedom is nothing else other than the freedom to flourish, to evolve to a high, beautiful, joyful, successful level of existence. So we're going to take a break right now, and I'll be back in just a few minutes.
In Ethical Empowerment, Virtue Beyond the Paradigms, Arthur D. Schwartz presents an ethical theory that is a framework for evaluating moral conundrums that go beyond legalistic rulemaking, dogmatism, and preconditioned thinking. The book is as much an ethical framework for unconventional ideas as it is for staying with convention. Ethical Empowerment is a manifesto of non-doctrinaire perspective. Ultimately, the hypnotic thinking of ideology and dogmatism can only be overcome by returning to the true source and essence of morality, which is nothing less than universal love. Discover how the philosophically liberating approach of the ethical empowerment can be applied to the range of ethical, social, and political controversy. Read about a plan to eliminate all political parties. Entertain the possibility of an overhaul of the patent system and its replacement with a system that rewards inventors while eliminating monopolistic control of patents and technological suppression. Many other transformative ideas are discussed in the book, including issues related to the monetary system, real estate, scientific paradigms, and a rational approach to conspiracy theory. While ethical empowerment will challenge your mind to consider new perspectives, the ethical challenge is always to keep the diversity, depth, and breadth of perspective within the boundaries of love. Ethical Empowerment is available at Amazon.com and most online booksellers in both print and ebook editions.
The new release, Without From Within, poems by Ron Shaw, is a must-read. One reviewer wrote, "The depth and imagery of these poems is of surpassing beauty. They flow and blossom from the pages, even as they rip the soul. This volume should be in every poem lover's library. Inspiring and fabulous." Another reviewer wrote, "The best poems are not just the ones that touch us through great turns of phrase, but the ones that tell a story to keep our mind reeling." Ron Shaw delivers on both counts, with wonderful concise tales from the whimsical to the existential, the dramatic to the heart-wrenching. Whether it is the social commentary of the dull or the relentless and intimate strength of the pulse, Shaw will keep you glued to the page with his thought-provoking verse. You won't want to miss Without From Within, poems by Ron Shaw. Available at Amazon.com in English, as an audiobook and in paperback, and in both English and French as an ebook.
Are you a person who enjoys intellectual social interaction and finds digging deeper into the nature of things, from big issues to everyday life, an important part of the pleasure of life? Social Philosophizers is a Boston area social club for those who desire intellectual socializing. It's a club for both singles and non-singles, and for anyone who finds intellectually mingling to be the best form of social mingling. The club offers a variety of interesting venues, such as philosophical get-togethers in private venues, book discussions concerning literature and philosophy, topical discussions over brunch or dinner, guest speakers, theater, after-work mixers, even long philosophical ruminations along nature trails or city streets and more. If you live in the greater Boston area or occasionally spend time in the area, you can choose a cost-effective membership level that's right for you. Basic membership is free. Find the link on Arthur's Philosophical Perspectives show page at artistfirst.com or just search socialphilosophizers.com. We hope you'll join Social Philosophizers today. That's socialphilosophizers.com.
This is Arthur D. Schwartz. You know, beliefs and disbeliefs can be very powerful. Much like philosophy, hypnotism is concerned with belief. Hypnotherapy, a practical application of hypnotism, may largely be described as the practice of removing false beliefs that form mental blocks to success, to happiness, and to well-being. In my hypnotherapy and philosophical counseling practice, I combine my work in philosophy with hypnotism in order to clear mental blockages that can occur on both conscious and subconscious levels. A mental block may be conscious or subconscious and can be expressed, for example, in the form of anxiety, low self-esteem or low motivation, bad habits, tobacco habits, weight gain, low performance, and much more. If you are interested in using hypnosis and the power of the mind to overcome mental blocks and barriers that have emerged in your life, please feel free to give me a call at 617-964-4800 or visit www.integralhypnosis.com. That's integralhypnosis.com.
You are listening to Philosophic Perspectives on the Artist First Radio Network. Let's get right back to it. As far as I'm concerned, he's the smartest guy in the room. Here he is, Arthur D. Schwartz.
Why? Welcome back. Thank you, Scott. Now, I left the first half on the subject of self-realization, and that is, I really do believe, where we're going to find the definition of freedom, because I think every individual, every society, I think every organism, in a sense, I mean, not that they, you know, if they were thinking organisms, but the idea is, what we want is to succeed, is to become that thing, or to accomplish that thing. Now, not just on one level. Now, the problem is, you can say, well, I said accomplish. Well, yeah, what does it take to accomplish? Well, you're going to have somebody accomplish something under great duress. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about all the whole picture working harmonically as it should. I mean, this is something I'm getting very, very interested in. I mean, I've been ill for a long time, but recently, I don't want to get sidetracked, but I'm doing work where that very thing of kind of a broad, harmonic, balanced, holistic growth is really what we're all about. And if that is in place, then we would say that is free, because we are becoming, we're realizing ourselves to what we want to be. What more can you possibly want? No, I don't want to be happy. I don't want to be successful. I want to be free because I want to own a gun and I can't own a gun. Baba, you know, bingo. I mean, is that all there is to it? You look at the whole picture. And so if you look at the whole picture, then you can see where you have these seemingly contradictory variables that, oh, this something doesn't seem so free here. Something seems to be out of whack. That's not right. Well, once again, I mean, that might be a case. I'm speaking, obviously, in great generality here. But generally speaking, when you look at it philosophically, for example, when you talk about libertarianism versus socialism, I feel that certain things in a society should be socialistic and certain things should be libertarian. I do. I mean, some things I think the government is too heavy-handed. We need free enterprise, but other things we need to be purely socialistic. I feel a way about healthcare. I feel a way about a lot of things, about the legal system. I feel that way about educational system. I'm very much with Bernie Sanders in that case. And because to me, if every human being should have the right, without going bankrupt, to have the education that will allow them to thrive. And because if you're born to parents who have money, as opposed to parents that don't have money, so one gets highly educated, the other one doesn't. I mean, that is just so unjust. Just like the legal system is unjust when somebody who's wealthy, gets the lawyer to get them off. Like in the O.J. Simpson case, which is a paradigm of that discussion. It happens over and over again. I'm just pointing out that I don't think freedom, I think the problem with the debate about freedom is that we look at it microcosmically, when I think it has to be looked at macrocosmically, the big picture. That tells us if we're free. And so there is lots of place for a harmonic society to have what we would call freedom, the freedom to do what you want to do in certain ways and so far as you're not interfering with the well-being of others. But the whole thing, it's not really even a trade-off. It really isn't. It's just, it's all work. When something just works, it works. Now, the other thing about freedom is, as I've often discussed, is this plural perspectivism argument that I make, which is the eager solicitation of differing points of view. Because how can you be free? How can you be a free thinker if you're locked in your dogma? I mean, you talk about freedom. I mean, I think that's a lot more telling about what freedom is than the gun control issue. Freedom to buy a gun, or freedom to allow myself to be subjective to a challenge. I mean, this is actually an irony. If you freely allow yourself to be, to be intellectually attacked, or you have to confront a different point of view before you decide what you want to do. One could say, well, gee, you're not free because, listen, I want to close my mind. Listen, I know what I believe, and I don't want to change it, and I don't want to hear what you have to say because I know what I want, and I can give a hoot about what you do. I don't care what you believe. I believe what I believe, and what you believe is just a bunch of bunk, and so I'm free to do that. He's free to do that. Well, in a certain sense of the word, yes, absolutely. In a certain sense of the word, he's free to do that. But is he free? Isn't that person, and we are all that person to some degree, let's face it. We all have our dogmatisms. I mean, let's face it. But isn't that the picture of unfreedom? That you're trapped in your myopic views? You're trapped in the same old, same old, same old redundancy, the same old thinking. Isn't that the absolute the most minimalization of freedom you can possibly make? To close your mind. A closed mind is an absence of freedom. In my mind. So I'm just kind of throwing some things, and I'm going from the social level, the sociological level, back to the philosophical level, to the psychological level, and so that's just what I'm doing. This is a big subject, so why not just go at it from every which angle, which is what I'm trying to do here. And now, I want to just get into something now. Scientific neuroscientists, many of them believe that everything is determined. And I'm no expert by any means on the subject, but I believe it's said that, in the mind has determined what your action is going to be, well before you actually do it. And so therefore, there's no freedom. It's being determined. But once again, what does that really mean? Does unconscious predetermination mean that there's no freedom? See, there again, I'm not so sure, because what exactly is unconscious? I would say that we have a lot to do with what we believe on the unconscious or subconscious level. We can interfere. We can program ourselves very freely on a conscious level, and then perhaps set up something that happens on a subconscious level. And so what once conscious becomes subconscious, and so then therefore it becomes predetermined. You've long forgotten about what you did, but you set the ball rolling, and so now you're being predetermined. I don't know about that at all, because this argument often, it comes, devolves into, we're just a creature of cause and effect, and one thing conditioning the other, and blah 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 blah, and so therefore, we're just like anything else. We're just like, stones and rocks that collide with each other, and they go whichever which way that the laws of physics would imply or entail. But no, the human beings are not that way. So a lot of things, I saw the movie Steppenwolf, I think, so many years ago. Steppenwolf. And in the movie, it was probably quoting from the book, they talked about, appearance and reality. And that is, of course, a great theme in philosophy, appearance and reality. And it's perhaps no more pertinent than in the question of the conscious and unconscious mind and the levels of determinism or free will that occur within both spheres, you might say. And this thing's called lucid dreaming. Some of you might be aware of how you can sort of program your own dreams. Of course, I'm a hypnotist and hypnotherapist, and we certainly can program a lot of behaviors, and that when done very well, you're not really aware that you're doing it. Well, that happens certainly in all the time, but hopefully in a positive way, you can turn that around, and so you begin to do the right thing, the thing that you wanted to do, without being aware that you did it, just like you were previously doing the thing you didn't want to do, like constantly grabbing for that cigarette or biting your nails, that type of thing. So even when something seems like it's predetermined, what I'm saying is, but what came before that? And then basically you get into this vicious cycle. In the end, it's not really all that important, because freedom, or I should say free will, for me is something that can't be taken away. And I do agree that it's just a hair breadth. It doesn't amount, it's just a very small percentage of our total decision-making process. But boy, what a difference it makes. And I think that is an extremely vital characterization or quality of being a human being. I don't mean to just say human beings. I'm sure there are other beings in the universe that this applies to, and certainly probably some animals as well, probably the dolphins. So now I'm going to, we're getting near the end of the show, and I want to bring in a topic that I have. It's actually the last section, the first part of my book. It's a concept that I call convergence. It's actually part one. It's part part one, section 10, so 1.10. And it's called Convergence, Power, and Correction. And I have sort of a little, not a formula, but an equation. And I say convergence equals causality plus dialectic plus free will. And so what I do there is kind of much what I've been doing, you know, today, talk about today on the show, is the... It's a balance between freedom and determination. Because causality is, of course, simply cause and effect. By dialectic, I don't quite mean the same way of the classical dialectical philosophers, which is based on basically they're just using definitions. What I'm talking about is just reasoning, not by necessarily definitions, but using partially definitions, logic, just consensus building, inference, all sorts of reasoning and consensus. And there's a certain motion. There's a certain continuum, a continuity. And what we see in the world all the time, that the world is becoming less diverse because when things work, when things make money, when things are successful, people will follow. Countries will follow. There is a kind of evolution based upon things that work. So you have causality, which is simply the cause and effect of the things that are done in the world itself. The dialectic is using the mind that consensually accommodates the thinking that wraps around the causal change. And then you have that beautiful thing called free will. And that makes the difference between fantastic success and victory and utter defeat. That actually can be the difference between the successful outcome to the human race and our ultimate demise. I mean, what I'm talking about is, you know, I think most people realize we're on the brink. We can go one way or the other. Many people think we're not going to make it. Many, you know, many scientists, I mean, I know Michio Kaku, he at least he at one point said that we had about 100 years likely before we're not going to make it because, and I don't mean to misquote him, I've actually said this before on the other another show, but I believe I'm quoting it right. And, you know, we're just not keeping up, you know, our ethical and social apparatus is not keeping pace with our knowledge. Of course, with the concept of the singularity, that would be argued, you know, by Ray Kurzweil. He would perhaps you know, argue differently. The singularity is going to actually save that, is going to prevent that, because machine intelligence will overtake us, and then they won't be screwing up like we are. But the idea of convergence is a kind of accommodation between freedom, determinism, and the actions of the mind. Now, the actions of the mind are kind of a determinism because, like I say, you form consensus, and that tends to breed more consensus. We, you know, as we understand things that work and are more profitable and more desirable in many different ways, then people tend to do that. So that's how causality and dialectic together form a kind of dual, or rather parallel, determination or determinism. The causality and the interchange with the human mind. But when it comes to making a decision to go one way or the other, sometimes it can't be predicted. And I think in the end of the, at the end, it will be acknowledged that, I mean, there is a theory of in quantum physics that some have made about the operation of the mind and how, you know, there actually is a sort of bifurcation, and choices can be made, and there's no predicting them. I probably didn't explain that correctly, but I think the argument is relatively right. So I'm gonna start wrapping it up now. I'm sure I didn't solve anything during this conversation, but during this talk. But my point is to my real point was to discuss the concept of freedom, what it means in the abstract, or things that or ways of looking at it in the abstract, as well as looking at it in its very concrete form. And then from there, to look at all of the different ranges of the discussion. I talked about, the gun law, the NRA and the gun law debate. And I talked about libertarianism and socialism. I didn't get to the abortion issue. Maybe I'll do that on a show in the near future. So, by the way, I just want to point out again that I have a show scheduled. Not a show, but a talk scheduled. On you can go onto the Social Philosophizer. Social Philosophizers website, socialphilosophizers.com, and you'll see the event Forms of Freedom, and feel free to join the group. It's free. You can either join the Social Philosophizers or the Meetup Philosophic Perspectives, the radio page, which you'll see there as well. And you can make comments on it and give me some feedback. You can email me directly at arthur@arthurdschwartz.com. So I think that's going to be about it. I want to thank Scott very, very much, as always. And so this does conclude tonight's broadcast. So for links to my book, Ethical Empowerment, the full name is Ethical Empowerment, Virtue Beyond the Paradigms, my philosophical counseling and hypnotherapy practice, and the Social Philosophizers Club, please visit arthurdschwartz.com. And this is Arthur D. Schwartz reminding you to live well and think deeply. Until next time, good night, everybody.